This is a digital recording of the Senate's Executive Committee of August 24th, 2011.
Here, everyone, and thank you for being here on time. And we'll try to begin on time as often as we can. So I don't have much to say about how I'm going to run things except I'm going to try to be John. So everything John said last year, just remember that. We'll be fine.
I see that he's moved way down the table.
So we're going to test our catalogs.
Let's see, a couple notes. The first one says Alex is here for Paul, but he's not.
He's not, so no.
Paul is here.
Paul is here for Paul.
So I'd like to ask that we, let me say a few more things. Maybe a person or two will come in and then we can do introductions. Is there anybody who needs a time certain for a report to make sure we get your report in? Thank you. So we'll put you at 3:45. I'll go down the list. New members on the executive committee this year include Armand Gawinski, chair of EPC. Brian Wilson is going to be the statewide senator who's on executive committee this year. Terry Leese is here in which capacity?
So he's replacing Maria Hess as secretary. For secretary. And Deborah is here replacing Terry on the executive committee. Because he couldn't have two votes.
So I actually want to. I want to make sure the provost is here for the to benefit from introductions. So
he has a long way to travel.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe he needs an escort.
He asked me what this meeting is all about. What should I say? As little as possible.
I think it's
since it's a virtual keyboard, you can't get the
coffee down.
That's true.
Virtual
coffee.
Okay, thanks.
We need an app for that.
Hospital virtual coffee.
There
he
is. One time we can, you know,
fashionably. Yeah, you can.
Okay,
so
did you
chair?
Early enough.
Did you shower?
To be sitting next to me.
So let's go ahead and do introductions. So give your name, your department, and what capacity you're here in. Maybe also if you've been on the executive committee for a while, let us know how long that's been. All right, so I'm Ben Ford from Mathematics and Statistics. I'm chair of the faculty this year.
I'm Deborah Roberts from Nursing. I've never been on XCOM before. It's actually my fifth year at Sonoma State. And I'm here replacing Terry.
As the representative from the Senate.
As the representative from the Senate. Thank you. Cue cards are always appreciated.
I'm Sam Brandon, the current chair of the Department of Mathematics and Statistics. I'm an at-large representative from the Senate on this one.
Oh, I'm John Wingard, anthropology, immediate past chair of the Senate, and I just figured I've been here seven of the last 8 years. I think this is my third year at this stretch. So.
I'm Paul Reagan. I'm the executive editor for the Associated Students, and this is my first year here.
My name is Matthew Lopez Phillips, and I'm the acting vice president for student affairs and enrollment management. And this is my, since you appointed me to this board, I think it's the third or second year. I can't remember what I went through. I think it is third.
I'm president, and I have been here for 20 years, maybe 20 years.
You say that about every faculty
to.
Even the pain. So I'm the great benefits of being a Roman Catholic. Why are those not happening?
I'm Andrew Rogerson, a new provost, who has been here, I believe, it's 4 weeks and 6 days. Too many mathematicians at this table.
Always too many mathematicians
around the table.
I am chair of these in the business administration department.
I'm the chair, Brian.
Lead from my position as at-large representative of the Senate to serve as replacement for the secretary of this department. This is my. I was on the executive committee as an at-large member, I think, 3 years ago.
Hi, I'm Armin Galinsky. Business and economics. I teach in the Department of Business Administration. It took me 17 years to get here. I'm only 18. And I'm chair of the Educational Policy Committee this year. And I'm new to this.
And I'm Margie Purser, and I am chair-elect of the Academic Senate. And this is actually my second year on Executive Committee, because last year I was an at-large rep from the Senate.
I'm Richard Senghaus, I'm in anthropology and linguistics. And this is my, I was here for a year and a half, I guess, before. I'm here as chair of FSAC, and I came to the stream one year, so. Sometime this year will become my third year.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Madavi. I'm from Educational Leadership and Special Education. It's my department. I'm the chair of Student Affairs Committee for the second year. It's my second year on XCOM.
I'm Laurel Holmstrom. I'm the Senate analyst. I've been on the Executive Committee 10 years.
I'm Steve Wilson. I'm in the gallery. I'm observing on behalf of the lecturers on campus.
Okay. I'm Brian Wilson. I'm the statewide senator, and I'm the chair of the music department. And this is my new time. This is my first time on the, wherever I am.
Jason Winters, CIO.
Is Catherine Wilson still, is also the other?
Yeah. Larry, it's your turn. Oh, I'm Larry Styreth. I'm the VP for Finance and Administration. I think I'm starting my 21st year at the university. So, all right, so approval of the agenda. Do we have any changes that need to be made to the agenda that went out? All right, I don't see any objection to approving the agenda. That's done. So minutes, we received minutes of our May 12th or 14th?
12th. I got some excellent grammatical changes from Sam already, which I've made.
Okay.
You don't have them, but I do.
So other than the grammatical changes, are there any corrections to those minutes? But I wasn't at that meeting, so that was easy. Okay, any objection to approving those minutes? All right, those are approved. I've not received any correspondence that I know it. Do you know of any correspondence I got? All right. So my report is just, you heard it all on Monday. I'm trying to start a kind of broader faculty conversation about academic identity, and since that's very tied to the curriculum, that's, I think, our charge to take that conversation on. I'm very interested in ideas that anybody has about how to pursue that. We have some pieces set up. I'm meeting with all the standing committees. I have met with FSAC already and have times on the first agenda for all of the other standing committees. We've set up every other week open lunches in the new faculty center that Provost Rogerson and I will be at, and I'll send an email to all faculty a couple of days ahead of each one, inviting them and encouraging them to participate. I've gotten a lot of feedback from people who want to be part of that conversation, so I'm encouraged that there will be a significant involvement in that conversation, and my hope is that can energize a broader group of faculty than perhaps have been energized and involved in recent years. So if people have suggestions, somebody make a space for Kelly. Oh, there's a rolling one there. So if people have suggestions for how to pursue that, I'd love to hear them. And there are, of course, many other interested folks on campus besides faculty who will want to take part in that discussion. So part of the discussion with the Student Affairs Committee and the student representatives on that committee will be how to work with the students in that conversation. And I'll also talk with Paul and Alex about that. So feel free to, jump in with suggestions anytime. And feel free to participate in that ongoing discussion that is, of course, a long-term project.
And what are they?
They're generally second and fourth Wednesdays. We're starting next week with the fifth Wednesday in August. Yeah, so second and fourth Wednesdays are the standard days. And President Armagnac will be joining us at those conversations about once a month, and I'll in the emails to all the faculty, I'll mention who will be there. There's one or two that the provost is out of town for, and we'll have other folks sitting in with us. And there are lots of people with good expertise to help figure out how to hold this conversation. But I'm thinking to get the broadest possible engagement. I'm not thinking that a lot of structure is important at the beginning, more it's kind of an opening up phase rather than a funneling into a results phase. Okay, so feel free to give me feedback anytime. On the one other piece of a report is that the Senate always has a representative go to the Associated Students Senate meeting. Last year, John did that work for the most part with the past and chair-elect filling in when needed, and we're planning to continue handling that role within the three of us for this year. It's been really helpful to have that tight communication between those two bodies. So for now, Margie is handling most of that load. So thank you, Margie. And since the meeting's moved to Tuesdays at 6 p.m., that's a big commitment, so you should all thank her. I think that's it for my report. Are there any questions?
You mentioned in your remarks to the convocation, and I'm sure I can find it out, but it's easier if you do that. You already have done the research. There was one university who had an elegant Latin phrase, according to your translation, was "let it all hang out." I'm sure that my Latin and yours are totally in agreement. But could you, identify what distinguished institution that might be?
Yes, omnia extaris, and that's evergreen. Unsurprisingly. That's actually how they translate it on their webpage as well. So my seventh grade Latin is not up to that. But, I did have a year of Latin, but didn't learn that. Any other questions? All right.
I can't see the clock. It's
3:14.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go to our first time certain then, which is proposed membership change to the Senate Diversity Subcommittee. And Adam Zagalong is the chair of Structure and Functions this year and is here to present this. Margie, remember our structure now is that the chair-elect is the liaison to Structure and Functions. But since Margie's brand new to that committee and was not in on any of these conversations, Adam's going to be presenting these two Structure and Functions items on the agenda. So if we could, why don't you come up here, Adam?
Well, hi, and thanks for giving me time here. I believe that the rationales have all been distributed for this, but essentially the first proposal was to change the membership of the Senate Diversity Subcommittee, essentially just to reflect the one phrase that has been listed at the top of the page. Two other at-large members elected by the faculty for staggered three-year terms. That's the essential change that's being made. The rationale just notes that to expand the diversity on the committee, there is a need for multiple faculty members from different schools, each of whom has expressed interest in participating with SDS and have simultaneously, as a result, found the committee to subcommittee rather to be short of members to fully carry out the charge. And essentially, the other essentials to that are reflected in the latter statement in the paragraph. While the committee does have up to 10 members, only 7 are positions elected by the faculty. And basically, as a result, just lost my place there, forgive me. Yeah, and the remaining 3 are ex officios, just want to get the terms right, and are thus not available to serve as liaisons to other committees, which would, in essence, make the mission a little more complicated. In addition, there is the nature of the subject which the committee is charged regarding representation of diversity, and therefore it's a pragmatic piece to encourage perspectives of the spectrum of faculty to deal with the concept of diversity and representation of it. In terms of how the campus community is to reflect that and to carry forth that piece. And the rest of the logistics, I think, are explained in points B, C, and D, which essentially show how there could be an increase in membership to allow for regular contact between committees such as EPC, SAC, FSAC, APC, and therefore the regular contact can be done with the President's Diversity Council and the academic coordinating team. And everything else regarding WASC, I think, is cross-referenced effectively on the website, but then it's all keeping in line with the proposals we carry out with the members as put forward in the proposal.
Right. Thank you. So I'll remind us that our task on executive committee is to decide whether the proposal is ready to go to the Senate, not debate the pros and cons of the proposal, and also that Cynthia Boas and Sharon Cabanis, the co-chairs of the Senate Diversity Subcommittee, are here to answer any questions if you have any. This change originated with the committee. This is essentially a request from the committee to expand. Terry.
I'm okay with the proposal. This additional information I have a little confusing because I read through it. I sort of thinking that you're asking for permission to create these liaisons, but in fact it seems like they're there, and I think it messes it up.
I'm seeing some nods around, so that might be something the three of you consider as streamlining the rationale a little bit. Any other comments?
Were there any negatives or concerns that were expressed that came up that might want to already be being addressed? I just see every reason to go forward, but I didn't know if you'd already surfaced some problematic elements.
Do you want me to address that?
Sure. Feel free.
When we, I'm Cynthia, by the way, when we brought this to Structures and Functions, I think they had a couple of questions. I don't know if I would necessarily characterize them as concerns, but they noted that there is an already pretty significant burden on faculty in terms of service, and do we really want to be asking more people to be on more committees? And I think they also noted that committees tend to get a little more difficult to manage the more they grow.
Right.
And we acknowledge both of those things, but there were a couple of dynamics that came together simultaneously that I think address that. One Adam just mentioned, which is that we do have a lot of formal charges to carry out, and we also have a lot of informal additional responsibilities because we're in contact with a lot of different entities and groups on campus, and so we ask everybody on the committee to really you know, go a little bit above and beyond. So there's already, there's a pretty big strain, there's pressure on everybody to, to be in contact with somebody on campus. And meanwhile, we have heard from a number of faculty from various schools who have demonstrated an interest in joining the committee. So they've actually taken the initiative to contact me or to contact Sharon and ask to be involved. So it's sort of in that sense, a no-brainer. So, but we know the concerns, but I think that given the nature of the committee and the priority that the campus has given to the issue of diversity, I think it just outweighs those things.
Yeah, because I saw those almost explicit, but not quite in there, but I did not know if that was the only issue that seemed to be problematic. So.
I think that was it.
So it seems ready to be some discussion that SNF had that was consistent with the points.
So, any more comments? Anybody care to make a motion?
Motion. Move it forward.
Second. All right. Any discussion?
Point of clarification?
Yes.
I agreed with Terry about that second additional information.
Mm-hmm.
I also found it really confusing because for a minute I thought they were putting liaisons into their charge, but that's not what's there. So
they are. They are.
No, they're not specifying particularly which liaisons they are
right.
And which direction they go. They're just saying that they're going to.
So
I found it confusing as well.
Right. So I heard Terry suggest that two just be removed.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think if we did that, I would be in favor of going forward.
Would you all have any objection to going forward, just removing two? Okay. So we'll consider that the motion?
Yes.
I mean, with that understanding?
That was what I was understanding.
Okay.
Are there any other subcommittees that have two at-large members?
Yes. Yes, actually. Senate Budget Committee has at-large people, and it's a subcommittee of the Senate, like the Senate Diversity Committee.
Okay. Any objections to putting this on next week's agenda? All right. Consider that done. So, President Armignani, would you like to make a report?
I think what I said on Monday suffices, but I do wanted to make a reference. I think yesterday, the chair of the system-wide academic senate sent this information about early start, which I really think is really helpful to understand what it is, what it's not, how we work, and I recommend it. That should be great since we're bound to get into it deeply. I thought it was very helpful.
I just had a question about the multicultural center. There's been talk that it would have a home in the new student center, but I've heard that it's not going to be funded this year. I was wondering, is that true, and is there any way could be funded?
They're not really correct. It will be funded next year. Maybe when the university center gets built, it will have a place.
But it won't be funded this year?
It will be funded
this year. This year, too. Oh, thank you.
Martin.
Actually, Catherine Nelson forwarded that early start information, I think, to the Senate listserv, so it's out there. Thanks for that. I actually had a faculty member ask me a question for you today, and I told them I thought you had actually said this out loud on Monday, but just to check, where are we now with the CSU? What percentage of CSU funding is actually coming from the state?
I would say that probably prior to the trigger, we have is about 45-55 and declining. 55 being from the state, 45 now from non-state. meaning the students.
Meaning the students, right.
If the trigger is pulled, that number will shift simply because the state will go down.
Right.
I don't know if you have a way to put it. It is that. The University of California now has tipped the balance for the end. At one time, before all of this happened, there was a policy that the trustees had. Neville Chamberlain was asked one time, what would make big changes? And he said, my boy, events. Where it was a one-third, two-thirds. So this thing was supposed to complete two-thirds. And the students are prepared around there and their parents. That obviously is no longer. I think we're about taking a little bit 45 to 55, from 46 to 54, somewhere there.
He was saying, I think we read recently where the UC, and this is specific with Berkeley, but we're at this point only 12% of Berkeley's funds comes from the state.
That is Chancellor Bergenau said that yesterday.
So he was wondering about it. Thank you.
They get a significant amount of their other sources. From grants, contracts, right. Operating the national labs,
etc.
Right. Further questions for the president? Why don't we move on to the next time certain, the 3:30 agenda item, the constitutional change for the regarding the chair structure. So, Adam again.
Pass out?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
The rationale will be in a circulating way to proceed.
Yes. Go right ahead.
Essentially, the movement is to reflect in Article 2, Section 4, change the chair structure, which just reads 4.1 as follows. The officer of the faculty shall be chair, vice chair, secretary, and immediate past chair when occupied. The term of chair, vice chair, and secretary shall be 1 year, reelectable to a second consecutive year. After 2 years of consecutive service as chair, vice chair, or secretary, an individual is ineligible to hold the same office for a period of 1 year. On completing service as chair, the chair shall succeed directly to the position of immediate past chair for a term of 1 year. In the event of a chair serving a second consecutive term, the immediate past chair seat shall be occupied. Essentially, the rationale to change the structure reflects that the current chair-elect or chair and past chair structure means that a 3-year commitment is required of anyone considering chairing the faculty. So the reasons to consider a change are outlined in bullets. As you see, a vice chair or chair structure will allow someone to try out, for lack of a better term, I suppose, this level of leadership without the 3-year commitment. The potential faculty leaders could more flexibly schedule their leadership around research commitments, including potential leaves, departmental obligations, things of that nature. And examples I think will actually follow from that, then 1 year following each position is noted in the points.
I was just putting on the key for whatever.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. And past chairs might choose to serve again without the requirement to serve as a chair-elect, and this makes the chair position re-electable for a second term that will allow at least a bit of continuity on occasion when faculty desire it. And as also indicated in the latter half of the documents that you have, most CSU campuses have re-electable chairs, and the chart supplied gathers that data, presents it forward. So essentially, it is a model that has been reflected in other CSUs.
So the scenario at the bottom is just for your thinking. It's not part of the proposal. That's just how we might transition from the current structure to the new structure if we go this route. So this is coming from Structure and Functions. It's been under discussion for over a year there, and we're talking about whether this is ready to go to the Senate. Richard, I think you're first on the list.
So, I didn't see
exactly clearly in it. Is there a requirement that somebody serves as vice chair or chair or that kind of thing before they become chair, or they could launch directly into that without ever having to go through that mode?
Under this proposal, there's no such requirement.
Okay. So, because if, I wonder if that might be worth noting in there as something for material out there. Since.
Okay, Sam.
On the back here, a list of campuses and so on, in the second column of the chair term, what are those numbers in parentheses following the...
There are how many additional terms you can be reelected for. That doesn't... No, that doesn't work for this. Either 2 to 3, no term limit. What does that mean?
Maybe that's what they generally do. When you're reelectable, they might... It might be normal for them. You know, I don't know. Some...
So there is no number. Does it mean there's no... I mean, it's not clear.
Just to the information, I can
right.
tell you what happens in San Francisco.
Yeah.
In San Francisco, they have a 7-year limit for serving on the Senate in any capacity. So ultimately, that becomes the... That sort of serves as the... For example, the past chair was there for 3 years, but he termed out because he took his 7th year on the Senate. But there's no specific limit on how... You could, I guess, theoretically be chair for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not really a limit on the chairship per se, but if there is one on... on this.
Do you just think maybe we should make these numbers clear?
Good point. Good point. Let's see, Terry.
I think my question is answered. So the chair, vice chair, secretary are all elected independently.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. President Armenana.
Just for a bit of clarification, on your fall 2012 scenario, I think you need one more sentence, which is faculty approve constitutional change, Senate approve by law changes. Constitutional changes require presidential approval.
Okay.
Just to let you know.
Okay. Thank you.
Keep the Constitution clear.
Okay.
Does that mean we need to another semester
to do something? Or never? No, that's you. These are students that are going to be approved. And, I don't know. Again, since I'm the old, I'm the one person who has been here the longest. This matter. No, Larry. But this matter has come before at least twice, if not three times, and it has not passed because of the history of the institution. You know, not because the president didn't approve it, because the history is that there has been a very strong tradition here. And I think if you talk to the whole most of those people now are gone. They really thought about it, and they didn't want that much accumulated power in the Senate. I know how you powerful you feel. You know, it's just an interesting perspective.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah, and the 2-year limit, I think, it takes care of some of that concern. Is the hope. Steve was next.
The past chair has duties, like the past chair is the parliamentarian. Who would take on those duties if there was no past chair?
Right.
Based on what we've described, I believe there's a mentoring contingency or relationship that's expected to unfold as the chair seats are available, and through having the next in line. Some of that is mitigated by, I believe, how that relationship is expected to unfold. Missing that detail.
Well, but the specific responsibilities of the past chair, we did talk about that, about making that more centered on the mentoring role without the other formal role. So when we went through the bylaw changes, we would have to look at each of those committees and decide whether they really needed both the past chair and the current chair, or all three, or whatever, and make some choices there. But the goal in thinking forward on this was to write down those responsibilities of the past chair pretty considerably. Okay, Deborah.
Thank you. Under the possible scenario that you propose to leave out before you presented it to the Senate, I would actually think that it would be helpful, and it might even be helpful in a table form, so that the senators see how things progress year after year after year, so that they get a better idea of a snapshot of what it's going to look like.
Okay. Clarify. I didn't mean don't present it to the Senate. I just meant the proposal is the constitutional change that's in your packet.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
This is all just part of the description. So the scenario is a possible scenario, but it's not what we'll be voting on.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But my suggestion is if you put it in a table, then we could see spring 11, etc.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Right.
Other comments, questions? Oh, I'm sorry, Richard was next.
So, again, in terms of the making the presentation accessible and addressing the issues, it may be useful to distinguish which of the past chair and the chair-elect kinds of roles are specified by the bylaws, which we can just change within the Senate, versus Well, the constitutional part is different, bigger, more complicated. And so we can change our bylaws much more easily.
Mm-hmm.
And if which tasks are constitutional, which tasks are bylaws, that may help people figure out what we're getting into.
Okay. Thank you. I believe we've gone through the Constitution pretty carefully, looking for all occurrences of past chair-elect, and made sure we caught them all in this proposal.
Yeah. But if you could identify which ones are currently identified in the bylaws, then people will go, oh, that's okay, and we'll have to come back and deal with those. But
well,
at least they won't feel like something's getting lost. They'll know, oh, it's that category of problem, and we'll come back to it. And that way, documents that we have to get back to that.
All right, thanks.
SNF decided to bring this forward first and then bring the bylaws.
No, he's not asking to present the bylaw changes, just to know what the bylaws currently say the past chair will do.
Oh, I see.
So that we can point out that when somebody says, but this is done by the past chair, we'll say we'll deal with that when we get to the bylaws.
Okay.
Is that
exactly?
Okay.
So that's not a problem
okay.
until the Constitution
right.
passes. But yes, we would have to think about that.
Okay. Yes,
Sam.
In terms of readiness, I found a couple of typos. I may just share them with you after.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Terry.
Again, sort of in a sense of completeness, typically we show the changes in bold. Again, the whole first paragraph, but throughout there are references to vice chair that I think probably should also be bold.
Thanks. We'll be able to come up with a track changes version.
Okay.
All right, any more comments on this one? Do you think that the changes you've suggested are substantial enough to hold it up, or can we make those changes between now and next week and get it in the packet? I think we can do the put things in a table and do the strike through version. We'll be okay with that.
I think most of the changes are cosmetic, not
really substantive. Yeah. Is the bylaws one easy enough in that?
Mm-hmm.
Right, okay.
Yeah, we'll mm-hmm. look through the bylaws and highlight them. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We have faith.
Okay, so does anybody wish to make a motion?
I move that we place on the agenda.
Second. Any discussion? All right, any objections to placing this on the agenda? All right, that's done. You are free to go. Thank you. Thanks, Aaron. I appreciate it. Okay, Provost Rogerson, would you like to make a report?
Oh, it's certainly not a report this early on, but just a statement following on from what you said, Dan. After what I thought was a very positive conversation, I visited with the five schools and sensed a little degree of optimism about focusing and maybe zeroing in on academic priorities that we want to tackle, and I just want to looking forward to what we do then in the Senate to make progress.
Thank you. Likewise, yes. Are there questions for the Provost? Steve.
Yes. Can you give us a report, especially since Jason's here, on the trickle-down part of the faculty workstation refresh program that's for the lecturers?
I'm going to pass that one to Jason.
Yeah, we're actually working with the AMs and the ACs in each of the school to actually get the locations and the list of all of those. We rolled it out to business and economics, just some of the first ones we got back in summer, and so we'll continue rolling out. We should have enough computers to actually hit all of the FERCs and all the lecture systems. And we're hoping to actually do it based on the request of either a Macintosh or a PC system, but we should have enough to cover that. So it's rolling out currently as we speak.
Thank you.
Any more questions for Provost Rogerson? All right, well, welcome aboard. Welcome to your first executive committee meeting. A lot of firsts right now, I guess. Every meeting you're at, people can make your first one. All right, let's see. Matthew, you wanted to make a report?
Sure, thank you. Just a few quick things. One, after 30 years of service, Mr. Chip Rhodes has chosen to retire. Tomorrow is his last day on campus, so if you have well wishes to send him, please do so. I think after 30 years, you get your email on for a while, right?
Okay.
The other news, I think Dr. Armignana alluded to it earlier, is that after many conversations with Dr. Armignana, Al Poyer, Larry, and myself, we figured out a way to fund the Multicultural Center with the director's position and some funding for our programming. So we are pleased that we'll be doing that. We're working on the job description right now, and we'll put together that search committee. In the meantime, we'll be looking at getting some student interns and looking at staff to volunteer to try to keep the center open until we have such time as my permit set.
If I remember correctly, one of Chekhov's hats he's been wearing is the chief of judicial officers.
Mm-hmm. You look like a wonderful person, Terry, to fill that role. I appreciate you stepping forward. At this point, we're struggling with an individual to do that. I was the previous conductor, so I imagine I will be fulfilling that role until it's time to find the permanent solution for the future.
Thank you. Any other questions for Provost Rogerson?
What kind of feedback you're getting in terms of sort of the wait list functionality as well as students getting into their classes?
I think we've talked about this at Cabinet and other places. There have been very few phone calls to the president's office or my office screaming at us about full courses. I think the wait list function has been wonderful for students to be able to get into those courses. And they're still squatting courses too. I know that they're still trying to, like you say, but I'm here. So it seems like it's been, as far as the feedback I'm getting, John, it seems like the waitlist function has taken away some of the anxiety, and people don't seem to be ramped up. There are, as always, students are still looking for courses and trying to get in. And I know Academic Affairs is trying to manage those courses and look at them very carefully once we're off. It's worked well.
Richard?
Following up on the waitlist thing, though, I did see that there were some things that caught some of the instructors by surprise in terms of which prerequisites were actually being enforced and which ones were being waived for transfers coming in on the wait lists. And so there were some cases where, like, application standing and that kind of stuff got squirrely. I understand that that's often complicated by the processing of the transcripts, so it may not even be into the system, but that's still a place that maybe a little bit more attention could go to. But on the whole, I'm actually surprised it moved as smoothly as it did. I think most people are, even when there have been hiccups, they sort of, I get why that one would be one. Mm-hmm. And so it's been pretty neat from the social science side of this. So, thank you.
Let's see. Paul.
You talked about MCC will have some funding this year. Is there a timeline for the director's position and when that's going to be?
Yes, sir. We have to vet. We need to vet the job description to Human Services. Then I want to get feedback from students and faculty. We have the advisory committee for the MCC, which would be an appropriate place to get some feedback on that too, and post as soon as possible. So I'm going to try to fast track this, and then we'll gather a committee together to do the search. I'm hoping to have a full. In all honesty, I think the likelihood that a full-time director will be here by the start of the next semester is where the outside, if they can get here earlier, would entertain them starting earlier. Mm.
Thanks. So, two things. Well, you just answered one question. We're talking full-time director.
Yes.
Okay. Jason, this is more for you. It's kind of the waitlist issue again. A student claimed today, and I'm assuming this isn't really happening, but that he was able to get into a course. You know, the waitlist rolls every night,
mm-hmm.
right? So this student claimed he was able to get into a course because when somebody drops during the day, a seat opens up and you can take it. So it's worth checking, because that would be a disaster if that was true. You know what I mean? Everybody
yeah.
get the scenario? So this
by a timing issue you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, you got
after the fact.
Right.
The next one on the list. I'm
right.
pretty
yeah,
sure
yeah,
it doesn't allow that, because I think as a drop, there's something that has to happen before the person officially vacates the seat. So, but I'll follow up on that to make sure that's
and
enough
I,
to get it.
When I was looking through course lists with him, I did come across one in PeopleSoft that showed as a green dot, showed one seat open with 20 on the wait list. And so it looked like you could add that seat, and I don't know, but it's worth a check.
Do you remember what course that was?
Brian.
Now, also, is it every night, or somebody told me this every only on Fridays that the wait list now.
No, we do shift to every Friday later on after census, so in case there is some random thing that actually happens, or I think we actually turn it off at one point in time, but during the first 2 weeks of school, it's a nightly process to constantly update.
Sure.
Just for clarification, during the summer, it was every Friday. It seems weird if there are 20 people on waitlist, that there's a couple of glitches in the system in terms of moving people from waitlist to enrollment that have been identified. Essentially, if you're using a permission number to get onto the waitlist because you don't meet the prerequisites, it will not then move you in as it sort of revets you to make sure that there's not a time conflict on the section of the appointment. But one of those things that rechecks these prerequisites and students can get stuck. And I've seen that with small waitlists. I had two students on the waitlist. One had been waiting into the class with no prerequisites and wouldn't drop him in. One was going to go up to 21 units, so with the current, and then it would show up as green. Otherwise, every class that I've looked at that has had open seats available, but the waitlist is still going to be electronic.
Okay.
It seems weird with 20 students if they'd all be in that situation.
Can I ask, have these been reported, like maybe AMs or ACs, so we're tracking those? I just want to make sure that we're following up. So we can...
This particular one that I'm talking about, we found out nicely the system knew about. And then pushed it up to Oracle, and Oracle would use it basically to alert us around it.
People's natural things.
And I just got to answer all of it through.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Okay, any more questions for Matthew? All
right. Anybody want to do the Honda Dolphin?
Pardon?
Anybody what?
Want to be the Honda Dolphin?
Everybody stares at the table. Okay.
You ask questions in class, everyone looks down.
Dan, can I ask you a question?
Yes, Andy.
Following up on that multicultural position, what stat and where is that position? Is that an MVP or is that?
Okay, let me do one more. It's what it's like right now, but we want to bet.
Oh, fine. Wait, yeah.
All right, thank you. So we'll move on. We'll do one more report and then the third agenda item. So, Brian, did you have a statewide seminar, anything to report?
We haven't met yet. This
okay.
Week, so.
Well, that was easy. Okay, let's go on to the agenda item then. So, item 3, digital signatures.
So, I think you've probably all seen the email that all the curricular forms require digital signatures now. Mm-hmm. And last year, Elaine, who is chair of EPC, thought I should do a presentation to the Senate about that and about how easy it is to make digital signatures. But since I sent out the email about that, I've gotten almost no questions about this at all. And I'm wondering if I really do need to make that presentation to the Senate.
Terry,
I think the bigger question is, have you gotten any digital signatures? Have you created digital signatures?
A couple of people have had to create them, and they've emailed me, and that's worked out just fine. No curricular items have come through on the new forms yet. You know, that process hasn't happened yet. But, well, I don't know. I haven't seen them yet. So, but like I say, I was surprised. I got very, very little asking about that. So I'm kind of wondering if it's not needed.
Sam?
How many positions would require a digital signature?
All of them.
I mean, how many
facts? All the signatures.
No, but I mean, so how many people are we talking about?
All the chairs. All the chairs of the curriculum committees.
All the department chairs.
All the department chairs.
So I was thinking...
Which I've gotten a lot of those already.
So
I mean,
it's not just people in the Senate. I'm not sure that the Senate is the right place to represent it.
Right. Yeah. So I'm just wondering. Yeah.
Richard's next.
Well, how long would the presentation be if you were to do one?
It's about 10 minutes.
Because I think if we... We're having a hard time finding space, and maybe I'd be worried about whether you should do it or not. But since it changes process, and there's a lot of people who don't read email, right? They just wait till they're forced to have it. Then I think that the more of this that we're getting out to the people, it makes more sense. And if we can also say, well, we've been showing Senate and all that, and don't complain now and refuse to go along because everybody's been there, I think it might make it smoother later. I think some people just don't necessarily understand the implications of what they have to be doing. Hmm. So if we're tight on space, maybe, but if we got plenty of space, why not?
Deborah?
I think given the gravity of what can happen with electronic signatures, I think the 10 more minutes is well worth spending. I really do. And I, for one, appreciate the time that you would do that and the effort that we're going to.
Conference.
Now I feel bad because I could go the other direction, which is, for me, I saw the email and I thought, I'm not on any of those committees and I'm not any of those signatures and I don't need to know this right now and it's the beginning of the semester and I need to know 47 other things. So for me, it's not an issue until I'm involved in curricular. So I'm not going to pay any attention, and even if I go, sorry, that was a terrible thing.
You don't learn until you're ready to hear.
I'm a special ed teacher. I mean, I think the 10 minutes would be helpful when I'm ready to hear it, but until I need to know it, it's just going to come right in and go right out. And I suspect that will be the case for many people.
Terry.
I saw the email. I read at the beginning of the summer and read it. I think directions are easy to understand. The digital signature scheme isn't easy to do. I understand Jennifer's point, and for that very reason, I'd like to argue for having it. It's just so that when Jennifer needs to know it, she doesn't freak out and go, oh my God, digital signatures, what's this? You see that they're around, you see that it's an easy thing to do, and just sort of get some comfort level in the back of your mind.
I have one likely to freak out over it.
I mean, this is just sort of a first step. I know that Missions and Records is making small, halting baby steps toward going to an electronic process for graduation applications. So, having people across campus see things like digital signatures will help move that forward more quickly. So, again, just kind of for the general comfort level, I think it would be great to just spend 10 minutes.
Kelly.
I'm really struck by the formidable task of presenting information to extremely knowledgeable and very well-experienced people in a format that is not going to bore the holy shit out of them, which I experienced for 4.5 hours at Google, one of the so-called innovators of technological tools, where they sat for 4.5 hours and shared all this information that they wanted to stuff into our heads by reading off of PowerPoints. So in that vein, what I would suggest is that perhaps it would be a good idea for Laurel to use that built-in camera on her computer and create a nice 10-minute video that we could upload somewhere. And anyone who needs to know about digital signatures can go play that little video and see everything that they need to know about it, which can either be done by doing a PowerPoint with a voiceover and then adding some additional cinematic elements, which, by the way, I know how to do, so I can help you, because I had to do this in order to get invited to this faculty institute. I had to learn how to do voiceovers on a PowerPoint and integrate slide transitions and everything. But That way, anyone who needs to forever can go and see this thing, spend their 10 minutes, have that to go back to, and it doesn't have to be 10 minutes where people go and drool, eyes bleeding. But it also helps shift the culture. It's hard to be in a room for 2 hours and have people talk at you and talk at you and talk at you and retain this information. But it's also shifting the culture of the university towards self-directed learning, the kind of learning that students are already doing, that we want to model for them, and away from hand-holding and spoon-feeding. We should stop doing it to ourselves, and we should start modeling the kinds of, you know, self-directed learning that students are already doing and that we want to shift to as a campus, and make these things available in a way that are interactive and engaging, and not keep reproducing the same old paradigm. Because like Jennifer said, if you don't need to use it, that's 10 minutes of your life that's gone. Thank you.
Let's see. Oh, Laurel. That's LH.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because what part of the presentation is showing a film that already exists that shows people exactly how to do it and how easy it is, which I could easily link to on the Senate website, and it could be there. It's even in the form that I send people to create their digital signatures. Those URLs are on that PDF file, so people can go and look at them. I mean, it's all there already. So that's why I'm, you know, if you think that's enough, that's fine.
Armand.
I've seen this presentation, and to echo what Laurel just said, and I think it is very entertaining and informative, but I think Kelly? Hi, I'm Armand. I think you raise a really interesting issue, and to me, though, the real issue isn't, you know, whether it's going to pull the Senate. The real issue is that this year's committee chair is not necessarily going to be next year's committee chair, so a presentation of this year's Senate isn't going to do any service to next year's committee chairs. So the idea of having a repository of instruction for this particular new policy and procedure makes a heck of a lot more sense than taking up this year's Senate time with a presentation on how to do digital signatures.
Excellent.
Any more comments on this one?
I just want to say, in defense of Laurel's presentation, that I wait every year for Bob's Rules of Order presentation.
Yeah.
I have my favorite slide, Rule Stone Parents. Never before. But I also think it's a great idea to put it on
I just want to say I admire Armand's optimism. He has admitted that with EBC, that means already doing the next year, all different shares.
Okay, so we've had comments in both directions. How are people feeling? You want to straw poll, or it sounds like the more recent comments have been put it online and be okay with that. Is that all right?
Excellent. Okay. Excellent.
Nobody cares to make a motion to the contrary.
Excellent.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Let's move on. So, Chair-elect Purser, do you have a report?
Yes, I can report that I almost think every one of the 243 committees that I'm supposed to meet with for the next month have reported to me when I'm supposed to meet with them. Otherwise, no, I'm clueless at this point.
Any questions for Chair-elect Purser? Ask her some hard ones. All right. Larry, do you have a report?
Well, I think we had a PBAC meeting, a President's Budget Advisory Committee meeting, I guess it was a week ago today, and I reviewed with the members the plan for the 11-12 year, and it seems to be gradually being implemented. But what was missing from the plan at the time was the whole question of the trigger and whether or not there would be a trigger. And now it appears that there will likely be a trigger, most people are thinking. And the CSU has advised the campuses to prepare a plan, two scenarios in preparation for the trigger. The first scenario has to do with how the campuses would meet the reduction if it were a one-time reduction. And the second scenario is how the campus would meet the trigger if it were a permanent reduction. And the president of the university is supposed to take both scenarios with him next week when he goes to the president's meeting in, I think you're meeting in Camp Pendleton. So since there's not going to be a PBAC between now and the time that Dr. Romagnana goes to Southern California, this seems like a good form to let you know what he'll be taking, so there would be a surprise. I think we have a plan together to meet the trigger should it come on a one-time basis. And the way I'm proposing to everyone that we do that is that you may recall last year, just before Governor Schwarzenegger left power, he allocated some things to the campuses that were called stimulus funds. And if you participated in the governing budget cycles at that time, I strongly urge my colleagues to not allocate or spend those monies, but to kind of set them aside because we were not quite sure what the new governor would do. Well, Governor Brown came, he didn't take them away, but people did hold those, and so those stimulus funds rolled forward into the 11-12 year, and they were allocated out at the division level. So I talked this morning with Ruben and the cabinet, and we've agreed to pull them back, at least on a temporary basis, to hold them for the trigger on the one-time basis. And then if the trigger doesn't materialize, one of two things would happen, ideally, or one thing that might happen with them is that they would go back to the divisions from whence they came, which would be the more logical thing. But Andrew and I have been talking, and we're sensitive to issues about spring enrollment and the need to provide appropriate course sections to our student body. So once we have a better feel for what the spring might be looking like, and there is maybe not a trigger, then we might talk and PBAC is not giving those monies back to the divisions from whence they came, but rather maybe pulling them aside for a way to supplement what might be a very bumpy spring on the enrollment side. So that's sort of the scheme for the one-time meeting of the trigger. And we don't have a plan, to be totally honest with you, at this moment in time for a permanent reduction. It would be, for us, it's $2.3 million, so it's a huge sum of money to try to identify at this stage and have it done permanently. So we'll have to give more thought over the next months. And Ruben will report back to us, I'm sure, when he returns from the Executive Council about what the collective wisdom that came out of that group was with respect to how we might proceed. But hopefully people think that's a reasonable way to proceed. I'll report more formally on it on the 15th of September at the PBAC. Other than that, then, I don't think I have any other big items to talk about.
All right.
Where is the suggestion that these cuts may become permanent coming from? Is it coming from the trustees or the governor?
It's not clear, and Ruben might speak to this better than I, within the Budget Act is this possibility of the trigger, and Andy might know this too. But the Budget Act is not clear whether it's permanent or one time, and no one has been able to get clarity out of either Governor Brown's office or the Department of Finance office. So I don't know if they know. Maybe it's very unclear to us.
I thought we had given up on the notion of permanent funding.
It is all sort of, that is a good point. I hope everyone understands these days the numbers are jumping all over the place, and so what we used to think of a base is almost becoming a foreign notion to kind of think about at the moment until things settle down a bit.
I apologize for the body. This is kind of me educating myself because that PBAC I attended for half an hour before we had to run out the door was my very first one. But I'm looking at the figures that you gave us that day.
Yep.
And the stimulus funds not allocated was on this list.
Yes.
I understood that these figures didn't include
the trigger.
So I
So
how can I count them twice?
Yeah, that part. That's the part I don't get.
Okay, because they were existing, Margie, in the 11-12 year as well, or the 10-11 year, the one we just finished.
Okay.
And the divisions did not spend them in 10-11, so
right.
They had them, and so they rolled forward
right.
on the savings, and then they exist again in 11-12. So we're using 11-12 as a permanent piece, but the 10-11 part we're using to do the one time for the trigger.
Mm-hmm. That was very generous of Mr. Schwarzenegger.
A nice temporary
gift.
It
was to make up what he did to our state. He did lots of things for us.
Jennifer.
My question is easy. The $2.3 million is what percentage of our current budget, approximately?
Depends whether you look at it from the point of view of the appropriation or the appropriation and the student fees. So let's take it as a point of view of appropriation. Appropriation is now, and Ruben is correct, is still jumping around a little bit, but it's probably going to end up being in the $55 million range on
mm-hmm.
the appropriation. So 2.3 divided by 55, whatever that turns out to be.
5%.
But if we throw in the student fees, which are now approaching $35 million or so, then it could be, as part of that overall piece, would be a less share. We tend to talk about it. When we talk about percentages of cuts, and you might disagree with it, but you'll probably understand why. We tend to view it as to the appropriation, because that's what the state is giving us. What the students give us is not really from the state, it's
mm-hmm.
from the students. So it seems, when we're talking about a cut, not to really
mm-hmm.
talk about it from the total piece, but rather than the state appropriation.
Just for your reference, about 4 or 5 years ago, that appropriation was about 78-79 million, and it would be probably shy of 55.
I might add that the Multicultural Center funding that Matthew spoke of is 3-year funding, so we've been able to identify resources to keep the thing going for 3 years, and it provides us 3 years of time to build that into a permanent base. And so I'll be discussing strategies with the PBAC as well about how that we make sure that that money is permanent by 14-15, but it will be 3-year funding until that time.
Andy?
Well, just to clarify, I mean, say that, and I agree with Larry that if you're talking about state funding, there is no such thing as a base. But there is one stable source of funding, the students. And that's not going to go down. I mean, that we can realistically look at. So when you try and figure out how much money is going to come to the university, the student piece is now the stable part, and the state is now the dynamic part.
And Andy makes a good point when we talk, and maybe sometimes in the past I've gone in the Senate, given it's been a couple of years since I've done it, an overview of the entire university budget from all funds, and by when you look at that, and you look at all our self-supporting funds, the state appropriation piece is really quite becoming more and more modest. It might only, we're $150 million operation, and maybe 50 now is coming from sources that are at the state taxpayer level, and the other $100 million is coming from monies that we generate either through tuition, or businesses that we run, housing, parking, and whatnot, or grants and contracts that we're getting and whatnot. So the enterprise as a whole is increasingly less reliant on tax dollars.
All right. Any more questions, Mr. President Schleyer? All right. So, standing committee chairs, I know that only one of you has had a meeting so far, but it would be very helpful if you could share what's coming up for your, if you see big issues coming up for your committees this semester, it would be good to know about them. So, Kelly, do you have?
We're going to be dealing with a resolution honoring art service to the Senate and to, especially to APC. We're going to be dealing with some of the budgetary issues in terms of planning. Susan Moulton's going to head that. Ben will come and visit us about shifting our focus in terms of the educational mission towards a more student-centered model and how that might look. And it's kind of based on the discussions that we started last year about trying to maybe go in the direction of e-portfolios, and using those as a way to address some of the advising issues going from the undergraduate undeclared into the majors, et cetera. So it's part of that ongoing conversation when I tie in with your things on convocation. So we'll have a visit from our chair. And we're very excited to be in the meeting.
Thank you. Arma.
Well, my predecessor handed me a list of, I think some of you are from the mathematics department, you probably know her. She handed me a list of 10 bullet points in very tight script. Since I started using the computer, and now I have children texting me on my cell phone, I can no longer read script. So I can't tell you what our agenda is for this week, but I can tell you that that will be coming to our first meeting. We have a number of programs to review coming up this year. We will, I am hopeful, we'll be able to attract and invite a new provost to come, as well as the Dean of Extended Education to drop by for a cup of coffee and a courtesy call. But at this point, we are waiting for, you know, for the various school departments and other committees to send us stuff. So we're receptive. And by the way, also, I have two previous chairs of the EPC committee who are serving on the committee this year, so I will have what I call adult supervision.
Well, I don't know. Who are those people?
Elaine and Carmen.
Oh, wow.
Whether they take me to the stable or it's dynamic, I don't know.
All right. On that note, Richard.
Hey, Richard, top that one.
Okay, so Faculty Standards and Affairs has already met with our new chair, and we're going to be looking forward to having the provost come meet with us. I'll check with Sean for the calendar. Coming ahead in the near future, you're going to see us sending around a memo to the chairs of the departmental RTP committees to help let people know what URTP discovered as they analyze the results of people coming through the two-year reappointment stuff, and some recommendations on how to go about doing those or deciding not to do those in the future, including keeping people mindful of the revisions to policy that have come through in the last couple of years. You'll notice we just had one signed posted just a couple weeks ago. So that's changing. Clearly, we're going to be involved in the development of the new faculty center, and we have been being consulted by the provost and others moving this forward, and signs are looking pretty good, fairly optimistic despite the times. Trying to see what else we had in here. A few other issues, but I don't think that they're high visibility, scary stuff. We'll be looking forward to when we have to revise the RTP policy again, whenever that contract gets signed.
You probably have a good year.
But it doesn't look like anytime soon, so we'll see. So I guess that's most of it. Yeah.
And
and of course, also, we're going to be trying to help Ben's effort to who are we and what do we want to be doing. So.
I keep forgetting to ask for questions, so just jump in if you've got questions for any of the three chairs who've talked so far. Terry?
I saw something really about a new subcommittee for EPC.
Do you want to talk about that, Armand, or the program review subcommittee?
Yes, that's an information item right now that we're going to be taking
over. Okay, well, it came through Structure and Functions last year, which approved a charge and all that, so I think
it's being convened.
Right. EPC is convening a subcommittee now, which is their prerogative once Structure and Functions approves the setup, basically. And that's happened. So hopefully...
That should streamline and expedite rather than stall and delay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. Any more questions for those three? Okay, Jeff.
I know we've been asked frequently about the ORSP and the director of that, and we've been hearing that there's, you know, that's being attended to. It seems like a high priority issue. We understand that we all gain by having that, and so very positive communications about that aspect with the provost and back in the office. So, we don't see concerns
on that, but we're more
I think I should give you a follow-up. Harry has found the money to fund that position for 3 years.
Oh, then, there you go. Okay. Thank you. that was something that we expressed concern in a letter that sent out last summer. So we're very pleased to hear that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Now don't jump on top of Jennifer or not. Okay, Jennifer.
I think for Student Affairs Committee, I see two major things that we're going to be working on. One is that the Senate directed us at the end of last spring to work on the fee referendum policy that's related to the student center and campaign issues. You remember that whole thing? That was, yeah, you couldn't forget it. So we'll be working on that. And the other one, which I think it's interesting that Richard failed to mention, was that last spring we did start working on a disruptive students policy with Matthew and also with Melinda. And I'm hoping that we can move that forward this year. Policy or guidelines about disruptive students and civility in the classroom, and when can you kick them out and when can you not kick them out, and try to clarify those issues. It might not be a policy, but there should be something, some guidelines.
Any questions for Jennifer? All right. Let's see. Andy, do you have a report?
Yeah, I just one thing that I did not mention with the convocation is that there will be a side letter between the California Faculty Association and CSU Med for next year. And the letter will be precisely as the letter that went out for this year. FERP will continue for 12-13. It will be based upon whatever the contract says at the time the person enters FERP, but all the other rules about application deadlines, waiver of application deadlines, etc., will be the same. So the language, there may be some minor tweaking on an additional issue, which will have no impact on the people that are, you know, would be eligible for FERP. So FERP will continue to exist, and for those people who don't remember the precise rules of FERP, since we do not have a finished contract, is that what FERP will actually look like in 12-13, moving forward for five years, will be whatever we contractually agree to on the faculty early retirement program if we get a contract between now and then. And so if there are changes between what the FERP policy currently reads and what the FERP policy will then read, faculty members, of course, can withdraw their FERP up until we're taken. So that was the easiest thing that's happened at the bargaining table so far. We suggested let's have a FERP letter, and they said that doesn't seem like a problem. Okay. As to Richard's concern about FSAC and RTP, we haven't settled since Monday. So, no, hold on, we'll get there.
All right. Any questions for Andy? Sam?
So I've always been told that FERP saves the CSU money, but I've also been told that the CSU always seems to want to change the policy. Do you?
That's correct in both senses. It does save money, as the fact finder in 2007 pointed out. It is a savings, and the management of CSU agreed that it was a savings. And nonetheless, there are certain people who do not like FERP. Some members of the board of trustees, etc. But they no longer can make the claim, or they could, I suppose, but their person in fact finding in 2007, when the fact finder said, let me get this straight, FERP saves money, they said, yes, we understand that. So that part, as far as we are concerned, as far as the fact finder is concerned, and as far as then spokesperson to CSU, is a settled issue. Nonetheless, there are people, but in this contract, at the moment, we have done back and forth discussions of FERP. We do not have a settled article on FERP as yet, because there's essentially one outstanding issue. Once that issue, if we can get that issue settled, we can get a temporary agreement on FERP. But it doesn't have to be, well, no, it doesn't have to do with cost. It has to do with the only group of tenure track faculty who are not eligible for FERP are counselors. And we believe they should because there is no cost. And that has not, we have not settled on that as yet.
Can I follow up?
Yeah. So if there's agreement that it saves money, what are the current objections based on? What are they telling people?
There are two arguments given as to why portions of the CSU management don't like FERP. Okay, one of them is that it makes that you can't hire behind them, which is definitely not true. Nothing in FERP says if you have a FERP faculty, you can't hire. Okay, if you have two FERP faculties, you can afford to hire, etc. Another theory put forth that management has never conceded is there are certain people who have been very clear they don't like FERP, and those are the same people who make it very clear they don't like the California Faculty Association, and they're not real crazy about the union and the faculty being unionized. But the argument that has been passed across the table and somewhat tepidly is, well, it makes it harder to hire new people behind, but there's nothing in the contract that prohibits hiring behind FERP faculty.
All right. Any more? Okay, we're down to our last report, and I will shuffle the order of these around some from agenda to agenda, so won't always be called who's last. But it's not always the case that we're going to get to every report, so if you need to make a report, make sure you tell me you need a time certain. I'll ask at the beginning of the meeting, but let me know ahead of time if you can, and otherwise make sure you're here at the beginning of the meeting to get a time certain. Paul.
All right, so AS had our first Senate meeting Tuesday. Seemed like it was about 3 weeks ago. and it was very cool. Did Alex explain a little bit about how the structure for AS has changed with the different senators and whatnot?
At convocation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's been really cool to see the new senators come in from the different positions and have interest-based things to come forward with. And so Alex has made it clear early on that the MCC has been one of our goals as the Senate, and to have kind of a point person in Kim Kiva, who is our Kim Liaz, who is our diversity senator, has been really cool to be able to make that work. And so Kim has been going out and talking to a lot of different of the multicultural clubs and fraternities and sororities. And so we had a conversation at Senate on Wednesday about the Multicultural Center and what we were hoping the director would look like and whatnot. So when you and the vetting process have kind of worked out a little bit, we're excited to get our feedback and to have somebody who's specifically dedicated to that kind of thing. Other than that, our chair of the Senate, used to be speaker, now it's a chair, we've kind of all kinds of name changes on that. But our chair of the Senate, Amanda Costi, is working on getting students to all the different committees. So for those committees that have met yet, if they don't have students, it's because we are trying to organize 15 different people's schedules that are all nightmares because we're busy. And so please be patient with her, she's working very hard. And the hope is that we will have students for committees by next week. But we're sorry we didn't get out this week. We're trying to juggle and classes moving and whatnot. We want to make sure that we have consistent people where they are. Other than that.
Thank you. Any questions for Paul?
Actually, this isn't a question, and I'll get directly in touch with Amanda on this one question. This is my annual plea, even though I'm not chair of this committee anymore, to make sure that we get a graduate student to serve with us and to be there with us at the graduate studies subcommittee.
Was there one last year?
There was, but he was not AS associated.
Right.
He was basically just a student volunteer who wanted to be, and he wanted to be a representative of the committee.
So the graduate, we have a Senate seat for the graduate student. However, that's hard for, it's been a challenge for us to fill.
Exactly.
So kind of our patchwork solution that we're going to try is the same student, I don't remember his name off the top of my head.
Chris, the English major,
yes.
English grad student.
Yes. Volunteer to do it again.
Yeah, good.
But where I am going to be kind of a mentor liaison with him so that we can kind of try to bring him in. We're the only, there are students that sit on committees that are officers in AS, they're students at large. And so previously we have not done a good job of kind of engaging them with AS and keeping everybody on the same page and even knowing what they know, let alone having them know what we know. And so we've kind of gone to, as we're trying to organize internally better, to try to get somebody to kind of mentor each of those students that are at large. And so, for example, if there's a student who's sitting on the multicultural advisory committee that's an at-large student, they would meet with Kim, who's our diversity senator, and then for somebody who's a graduate. So that's kind of the process, and we're hoping it's going to kind of fill that void.
Great.
So we'll see.
Thank you.
Please give us more feedback as we roll ahead.
Any more questions? Great. I'd like to say I'm very much looking forward to working with you this year. Glad to have you as my AS contact. Thank you. So we're to the point where we need to approve an agenda for next week's Senate meeting. There's a proposal on the last page of your packet.
We removed... let's see.
I didn't put it
she
on
didn't
there.
Put it on there.
No,
she,
and you can.
Wow. She knew we were going to say, "Don't do the presentations."
You can add. you can add. SAC has sent me their end of year report, so that will be available for the Senate. Uh huh. And.
The information items.
Who's going to present on these two business items? Is Adam going to come and do that, or? That's my question.
Hmm. I should have asked him when he was here. I will talk with him and I'm thinking either the chairs of the Senate Diversity Subcommittee or somebody from Structure and Functions will do it, and I'll work that out with
okay.
him.
Okay.
That's all right.
Cool.
What's that?
Designated.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And, the constitutional change, I think, Adam, yeah. I think I'll expect Adam to do those.
Okay.
Anybody know they want a time certain for a report at the Senate meeting?
Okay. Under information items, end of your report, scholarship, GE, PDS, should that be PEC?
No, PDS. Professional Development Subcommittee.
Okay. I thought it was the President's Diversity Subcommittee.
No, they don't give us the end of your report.
Kelly.
I just have one correction on the agenda.
Yeah.
I think Robert's name for the committee.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
It changed to Estrada.
Thank
so
you.
Fall and she'll be doing spring. We're not going to do either or. We're just going to do. I'll take this semester and she'll take next semester.
Great,
thank you.
Next week I'm going to be traveling, so I'll have a proxy for FSAC, but she probably doesn't want to have to give a report.
And there's nothing to report.
Right. Okay. Nothing that needs to. We can wait until the next go round, so I can just have the others.
That's Vicki Montero.
Yeah, probably Vicki.
Well, it hardly seems fair that she gets all the status with my proxy and just going to be able to report. Status alone for.
Have we any motion?
Move to approve.
Second. Any objection? Or allow any conversation? Any objection? All right, I think we're done.
Wow, this is
awesome.
Wow.